This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 262. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and I'm joined by my good buddy from the road, Montana Seahawker Adam Emmert.
Yeah, finally getting the show out because I finally had a minute to pull over at some random interstate exit in Humboldt Redwood Forest. So if you hear like maybe a semi go by, or you know maybe like you know a biker gang comes by and robs me blind while I'm doing the podcast, you'll know what happens. So just don't be surprised.
Well, it's probably a good thing that it worked out this way, Adam, because I feel like it gave people a sufficient amount of time to recover from this last game against the Bengals, because I think a lot of people needed that recovery time.
They needed to recover from a win? That was hard on them?
I have never seen a group of fans walking out of a stadium like more frustrated over a win before. Normally you have like the Seahawks chants of people walking down the ramp. It's the home opener. You get the win. But it was quiet. It was almost as if they may as well have lost the game. That was so morose walking out of the stadium.
Well, you've met Patriot fan, right? They're like up 14, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're only up 14. We're going to blow this, man. And they're always mad, always sad, unless they win the Super Bowl. That's it. No, it was interesting, the reaction to this game. Was it ugly? Yes, it was ugly. Was it a week 1-4 performance from a Pete Carroll-led Seattle Seahawks squad? Yes, it absolutely was. This is exactly how it goes every single year with this team. They don't start out the year gangbusters. But what I like about it is they didn't start out gangbusters, but it was a win. It was a gutsy win. It wasn't a perfect win, but there were some things to look at it and look at with a positive light. And there were some things to look at and be like, yeah, going to have to clean that up.
With this coaching staff, they're able to look at those things that they need to clean up, get them cleaned up. Now, I don't know if it was a lot of missed tackles so much, but there were some issues with the defense, and particularly looking at you, Tedrick Thompson. But there's some positives, too, you know, and we're going to go through all those throughout the game. DK Metcalf, he seemed to live up to that offseason hype that everyone was considering for him. But there were probably some hype trains that were derailed in this game. And we'll look at the Steelers game coming up. And Adam, I want to let you know how a win against the Steelers, it really is a key to a Super Bowl victory for the Seahawks. And I'll get into that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm so mad that you put it that way, because they're probably not going to win that game, just so you know.
Well, we'll get to that. And then in the second half of the show, I want to tell you about, I might have to talk about a guy in my section who is egging me on to boo my own team at this game.
Oh, well, I mean, I think you should have the freedom to boo or to not boo.
Oh, however, that's exactly what I told him. I said as much. You can boo if you want, dude.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, like, your boo, like, I understand where it's coming from. There's some ugly things in this game. Yeah, I get it.
And there were quite a few boos in this game, and I did understand it. There were the points in this game where, you know, Russell Wilson's getting sacked back-to-back plays on first and second down, and then they come out and, you know, third and 26, and you have to just throw a short pass to whoever it was, Nick Vinette or Chris Carson, or run it up the middle. If you've watched this team in the past, that is what they do. There is nothing new that's changed when they're getting into third and 27. It looks like it has in past years. So that's not surprising to me.
Yeah, that doesn't mean just because you have like battered fan syndrome doesn't mean like you should accept it. Like that's not good, but it is the way that they play. And really, it was kind of a combination of not really dominating on the ground early. I mean, they really didn't dominate on the ground all game, but not enforcing their will through the run game. And then early on, especially, still trying to go for those chunk plays instead of trying to hit some more underneath stuff, which really isn't their MO anyways. You know, a lot of the dink and dunk passing and that sort of thing. But they did find a way. They did find enough. And Russell Wilson pulled out a couple plays. And like you said, DK Metcalf had a really nice debut as a rookie receiver. It seems like he broke a record of somebody important somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah, Steve Largent. And he was rocking the Steve Largent throwback jersey in the after the game. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. So, I mean, there's definitely some positive takeaway, and I think DK Metcalf's play is one of them. I mean, he really was a great physical presence out there for the wide receiving core, and he ran the kind of two routes that he can run really, really, really well to perfection. The deep route and then the slant. And those two things, there was a great breakdown done by a guy, I believe his name's Brett Coleman on YouTube.
Mm.
And he broke down DK Metcalf's game, and he's like, he could dominate the same way Calvin Johnson did. He basically ran two routes, a slant and a seven route or a nine route. Like, you know, that's it. That's all they do. And you can dominate that way. And so you saw that early. You saw Russell Wilson trust him and, you know, make a great catch in traffic, you know, later in the game. And I'm still going to temper my expectations, you know, throughout the rest of the season. But I'm glad to see him show up and Russell have the trust in him early.
And I think that was really the key takeaway for me, that in his very first game, Russell Wilson had that trust to go to him. Now, is he going to maintain a 90-yard per game pace throughout the season? Probably not. Chris Carson's probably not going to maintain a 6-catch, 2-touchdown performance throughout the season either, although that would be pretty sweet.
I think the 6-catch part of that is probably pretty sustainable.
Maybe
that was
not
one thing.
6 catches, though. I mean, that's like almost 100 catches in a year.
Look, I was really, really excited to watch a play run by the Seahawks that I've maybe seen run 10 times during Russell Wilson's tenure as quarterback. And that was the screenplay. And guess what? If Chris wasn't dropping it, he only dropped one.
Yeah.
They were all pretty positive plays.
Yeah.
Like that really worked. I've been, me and Clinton Bonner, we've been screaming for the screen for years.
And I think we all have. Yeah. Joel just even passes out to the running back. I feel like we've been talking about that for a while and wondering if Russell Wilson can even do it.
Well, he can do it, but it's never been a strength of his. No. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. But one of the ways that he's obviously worked on his game to get better this year is to get better at throwing that pass.
It looked good. And the Seahawks got a touchdown out of one of them to Chris Carson, where he just gets the ball over the goal line. And it may have been overturned if they had cameras in that area that were better. But there were a couple interesting calls in this game in terms of reviews, whether it was that particular review, whether it was the end of the game where Andy Dalton fumbled the ball forward, or whether or not, you know, Pete Carroll challenging the pass interference call on Trey Flowers, which I think we all knew that wasn't going to get overturned, but I think it had an impact. I think it got the crowd into the game with the ball down on the goal line. I think it got the team fired up because they were calling for Pete to throw the challenge flag in that particular situation. You know, most of the time they don't call pass interference on Trey Flowers in that situation, but it's, at the same time, there was enough contact there where the officials aren't going to pick it up.
Right. And I think Pete took a calculated risk there in the sense of, okay, it's early in the year. I'm going to try challenging this. I just want to see where the line is.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with it for me was, it's like, odds are the way that it's been described, I don't see that as being overturned right there.
No.
And so now you're just giving up a timeout and a tight game going down the stretch. And that was kind of alarming. But that's Pete's mentality a little bit. It's that go-for-it mentality. I understand where he's coming from. I'm not sure that was the time for it, but he did it. It was fine. Yeah, they weren't going to call that back on Trey Flowers, who had a pretty rough game overall.
They went at him pretty hard.
Honestly, a lot of the completions that he gave up were quick slants and things like that. And to me, and I mean, disagree with me if you want, it feels like those are the type of completions that the defensive scheme is designed to give up. You know, that quick over the middle crap, you know, for 5-6 yards, we'll give that up all day until it comes down close to the goal line. We'll let the linebacker stump you when you catch it. That's fine. Just don't get beat deep.
But the problem is that the Seahawks did get beat deep. And there was particularly the drive right before the end of the half where, you know, they send the linebacker off the edge, the tight end. You know, Trey Flowers is a little bit late getting over there to swap out his zone assignment, and they give up the long play to the tight end, and then it's, you know, just a couple plays later, and they're going deep for John Ross. Just over the fingertips of Tedrick Thompson. He was in position for that play, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah, so I don't get nearly as upset about that play. Oh, I mean, especially knowing that it was a win when I finally did get to sit down and watch a game. But in real time, I probably would have been a little more angry, but he was in the correct position. He just made the wrong play on the ball. And that's something that's number one, completely fixable. And number two, it sounds like he doesn't normally do. So, like, in practice.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's fine. What was maddening to me on a defensive standpoint of things was having the defensive line actually do a pretty darn good job of disrupting Dalton's rhythm. I mean, not with a lot of sacks, but at least making him move around and think about what he's doing, right? And give up completion after completion, you know, just over the linebackers and in front of the safeties. That intermediate middle stuff with, like, you know, deep crossers and things like that. Man, they hammered that home. And once they started completing those, then it was screen here, screen there, and the linebackers didn't know which way to go. That was really difficult to watch.
It did seem like they had a hard time really finding answers for a lot of the dinking and dunking that the Bengals were doing on the Seahawks defense. But, you know, you say that that frustrates you. Then I look at the amount of points they scored, you know, especially after the half, only allowing 3 points, and you go, that's a Pete Carroll defense, and I will take that. If they're getting turnovers, if you had a performance that really surprised me in a pleasant way, it was Quentin Jefferson, his 2 sacks. You had Al Woods, who had the fumble recovery when Andy Dalton craigged the pass right out of his hand and into the hands of Al Woods. That was fun. So there were kind of overall. And then you had Jadeveon Clowney, who had a batted pass. He had a holding call that I thought was impactful early on where he was held by the tight end, and, you know, he chased Dalton down going out of bounds at one point in the game, too, that led to a field goal.
Jadeveon. Oh, man, I thought I had this down before we started
it's
again.
Not,
all
it's
right.
not an on, it's an un, and it's not a Dave, it's a Dev.
Dev? Jadeveon. Jadeveon. Okay. Jadeveon.
Not an emphasis on the E, though. The emphasis is on the Dev. Jadeveon.
Yeah, whatever. Like, that's just too much. And so it's JD from now on. So JD was actually fairly disruptive. And I thought he made a great debut for a guy who's barely knows the defense. And it was just out there with effort. And you could tell it made a difference. It made a difference for the other pass rushers. There's a reason why Quentin Jefferson had a big game. It's because they had to pay so much attention to Clowney and all of the mess he was creating. A lot of people talked about Clowney's sack numbers when we signed him and being like, well, he's not an elite pass rusher. Well, right. But I'll bet you money that J.J. Watt's pass or his sacks come down by a fair amount this year. Just because of the disruptive force that Clowney was for them and how many sacks that he opened up for him or Merciless or any of those other cats. So I was excited about really the defensive line as a whole. They got after the passer fairly well, and we've got more help coming in that department. But what I was most impressed with was the idea that they really shut down the run.
And really, the Bengals didn't even seem to try. They didn't even want to run it because it looked like they were going to take what Seattle was giving them and be content with trying to dink and dunk. And it was an interesting stat that I saw when quarterbacks have those career type days. I think I may be wrong, but I think the stat was if the Seahawks allowed more than 400 yards passing, that they're 6-0 in those games.
I was just about to bring this up, so I'm glad that you led us there. So I heard a lot of people wringing their hands about the fact that, oh my stars, Andy Dalton threw for over 400 yards on us. 400 yards. Yards. Yards.
Yards.
Yards don't matter. God, passing yards don't matter. I don't know how many times I have to say it. The fan base can't seem to get it through their head. It's absolutely asinine. Did they hold them to less points than the offense scored?
Yes.
Then great. The defense did its freaking job. Don't concern yourself with Andy Dalton racking up yards in the green zone in between the 20s. Nobody gives a crap about those yards, especially Pete Carroll. That's who this team is. If that drove you crazy, well, then get ready for a long year because it's going to be a lot of this bend but don't break thing and hold people to field goals while you hope to score touchdowns. That is going to be the complete mindset. Oh, and winning the turnover battle, like just getting after the ball. I could care less if they rack up, you know, a few extra first downs for the most part until the time of possession gets a little lopsided. But At the end of the day, it's limit the points, create turnovers, create sacks. That's the name of the game. Oh, and stop the run. Those things right there. Those things right there. And honestly, the defense did it. And not only that, but they came up even bigger down the stretch and helped seal this game.
Points definitely matter. You definitely need to score more points than the other team. That's the key to victory in every game. The key things for me for this defense were seeing them shut down the Bengals in the red zone. 0-3 inside the red zone. They had a missed field goal. They, you know, when they were in the red zone, they only kicked two field goals. But Seattle's offense inside the red zone, they were 2-for-2 with scoring touchdowns. So the ability of the defense to shut the other team down, particularly in the red zone, you brought up turnovers. You know, Cincinnati had 3 turnovers. They had the one punt fumble. They had the Andy Dalton fumble. And then there was another fumble. The fumble to end the game, obviously. And then you just had the one fumble by Chris Carson, which came at a really bad time. But they were able to recover from that and get the ball back.
But I still trust Chris Carson. I think that's going to be fine. I'm not worried about him fumbling the ball all the time. Again, it's week one. These guys haven't gotten many live bullets fired at him. And it was at the end of a long run. A guy snuck up behind him that it was a little fluky. Yeah. That was fine. But I like the way, even though Chris Carson didn't rack up a lot of rushing yards, he still set the tone. And like a lot of people are missing on this. Once they set the tone with Carson a little bit, you saw towards the end of the second half, play action now opens up everything in the sense that Russell Wilson fakes it to Carson and then unloads a bomb to Tyler Lockett for a score.
Yeah, and apparently we're going to need that help with the play action because the offensive line was not as good as I expected. Again, it's week one, but I thought they were going to give Russell more protection than he had in this game.
That was a joke show. That was an absolute joke show. And they are going to have to get their poop in a group right quick. Yeah. That was unacceptable. That was an unacceptable performance by the offensive line.
And Justin Britt got manhandled.
So, just what I was going to touch on. I think whatever it is that he got hurt with early in the game, but managed to gut it out the rest of the game, limited him severely. It made a huge difference because then at that point, then they're picking on the left guard, whoever's in there, you know, at any given time. And then frickin' Effetti just looked like he was clueless again, like he regressed to 2 years ago Effetti. That was maybe the more frustrating thing.
And that's something they're going to have to get cleaned up going into the game against Pittsburgh because it's not going to get any easier with the guys on the defensive line for the Steelers.
Well, fortunately, if you watched a little of that Pittsburgh Steeler game early, I don't think the second half even mattered. I didn't even know
if the first half mattered after they got down by 20 points.
Yeah, well, I watched it up until they got down by 20 points. And then it was like, okay, then it's just Steelers playing catch-up ball. It's not going to be their MO, the way they're going to try to play football for the rest of the year. It's not even worth watching for me trying to figure out what they're going to do when we come to town to Pittsburgh. But what I did see early on, and I don't know if you noticed this, Brandon, but the Patriots were running the hell out of the ball. Yeah. They smashed him with the run, and then once that happened, then they started using play action, and Brady picked them apart. What offense does that sound like to you?
It does sound like the Seahawks offense.
Yeah. So I think that could play a huge role. The other thing that the Patriots seemed to kill him on early with in often was shallow crossers.
Yeah.
And that's not something that this offense really implements a lot. And I'm sure that has to do a lot with Russell Wilson's height. Like he does 1,000 things to make up for it. And it's more than worth having as your quarterback. But that is the one area where he's probably not going to be able to exploit the same way that Brady does.
Correct. Yeah. And whether it's his height, whether it's his comfortability, it might be Pete Carroll's comfortability with it, too. I don't. It's probably his height, though.
Yeah. You just can't see and get it up and over and get it up and down over the offensive line quick. You know what I mean?
Well, before we get more into the matchup with Pittsburgh, I wanted to ask you one question because going into this game against Cincinnati, why did we think the Bengals were going to be bad?
Well, because everybody said they were going to be bad. That's the thing. And I mean, a lot of people wringing their hands too over the fact that we didn't beat the Bengals by more.
Right.
Well, okay. Understand, but we really don't know for the most part who these teams are until about week 6 or 7. That's when you start to get a real good feel for it. And I didn't know that. I guess I just didn't know in my heart of hearts that they were just going to be terrible. I think it has to do with everybody's opinion with Andy Dalton. I think that's probably what it boils down to.
We may find out 6 weeks down the road that when you pair Andy Dalton with a coach like Zach Taylor, that maybe he has a little bit of resurgence the same way that Alex Smith started to have a resurgence with Jim Harbaugh and then Andy Reid. It may just be the right fit for Andy Dalton at this point in his career. We don't know, but I feel like I'm in the same boat. I go, well, why did I think the Bengals were bad? Well, it's what we heard in the media. It's what we saw in the power rankings. It may have been, you know, our Rams hatred and the fact that Zach Taylor was going to be the coach. That may have had something to, that may have played a part into it too. So, yeah, it creeped into my mind that, yeah, we don't know these teams. We saw with the Rams, you know, they were so close to, you know, that was a close game with the Panthers in week 1. And they go on the road and you say, oh, well, you know, we kind of thought that that was going to be a coin flip type game, but then the Panthers come out and they lose to Tampa. So on a Thursday night, a Tampa team that lost to the Niners. So, yeah, we don't know how these teams are going to be early on in the season.
Not really. And after a quick week 1 knee-jerk reaction, if you were to rank the teams in the NFC North, it'd look a lot like this. The Baltimore Ravens on a whole nother planet. Right. The Bengals, pretty good. The Steelers, pretty terrible. And the Browns, maybe the worst team in the league.
Right.
Do you think that that's the way that division is going to finish up when it's all said and done?
Are the Ravens going to go 16-0, blowing every team they face out by 50? Probably not.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson's going to break the Mahomes touchdown record in a season this year.
That'd be fun. I'd be fine watching that. It would at least be entertaining. But do I think it'll happen? No.
No, it's not going to happen.
We know that the Steelers aren't going to only score 3 points. We know that the Seahawks have had their struggles going into Pittsburgh and getting a win. Just historically, it's interesting to look back that, well, Pete Carroll, the last time he was there was 2011, so Russell Wilson didn't even make that trip, and they score 0 points against the Steelers. Yeah. The last time that the Seahawks won in Pittsburgh, it was in 1999, Mike Holmgren's first year with the team, his third game as the Seahawks head coach, they won 29-10, not a single offensive touchdown. You had a pick six, you had a Charlie Rogers 94-yard punt return, and 5 Todd Peterson field goals, and all 10 points by Pittsburgh were scored in the fourth quarter.
Who was the quarterback in that game? Was it Kitna?
It was Kitna.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I have a lot of confidence going into Pittsburgh, especially after they just got embarrassed by the Patriots in Foxborough. That doesn't feel good. That's everything that somebody like Mike Tomlin needs to light a fire under his team's ass. This just, it doesn't set up well.
Well, it does set up well for the Steelers because you mentioned that margin of victory against the Patriots. And I was talking to some of the Steelers guys this week, and they said that coming off of a blowout loss of 20 or more points, the Steelers are 6-1 when they come back home in those situations. So
yeah, that seems like a true fact. And the one thing that you did notice, though, a little bit with the Steelers early, you got to shut down the run with them. You can tell that with Big Ben getting to the twilight of his career, even though he probably doesn't think so, that they're really going to make a concerted effort to run the hell out of the ball, James Conner. And they did. They really did try. But the Patriots were all over it. They weren't having it, especially those outside, you know, stretch plays from the shotgun. They were running a lot out of the shotgun. If they do that again against us, which I'm not sure they will, but let's say they do, I like our chances there, getting that shut down, making Big Ben one-dimensional, and again, just trying to hold him to field goals.
They do need to stop the run, and that was one of the things I think we can at least look at and say, well, they were able to do it with the Bengals in a sense, though I feel like the Bengals never really even tried that hard to run. You know, the number of attempts, I think it was, what, maybe 14 attempts overall in the game, and right from the start, they were throwing it. So I think that if I were the Steelers, that's probably the strategy that I would go ahead and start out with, especially at home, try and get an early lead and work it that way if I'm the Steelers. But, you know, I'm also, I do have my concerns about the Seahawks. And I mentioned that how a Steelers win is for the Seahawks is a key to a Super Bowl victory. The Seahawks in September going on the road are 1-10 outside of 2013. The only time that they won two games on the road in September was their Super Bowl season. So we need to, they need the win against Pittsburgh, and then they need the other win on the road against Arizona again in a couple weeks. So we need those two wins and to pretty much lock in our Super Bowl hopes. But 1-10 on the road in September outside of 2013 with Russell Wilson. That was a surprising stat for me to pull up.
They never play well early, and they never play especially well on the road early. Like, they're terrible. Like, it's just how it's always been. But a lot of those I can recall being in very warm weather places like Carolina, Miami, San Diego, places like that. Fortunately, it should be a decent enough day in Pittsburgh to where not every dude is cramping up by halftime.
Well, a couple of those were in Green Bay, but you're right.
I forgot. Don't worry about those. They were heat waves in Green Bay that year.
Last year against the Bears.
Fact. Don't look
there was that one.
Yeah, well, that was it. Probably global warming. It was extra warm in Chicago.
Extra warm in Chicago for September, yeah. For what Russell Wilson really likes in terms of his September weather.
Don't burst my little theory here.
Well, see, Arizona, the win was in a dome. So that makes a lot of sense last year where they went 1-2 and the one win being in Arizona.
Right.
Yeah, that's the one win that they've had inside September outside of 2013 was that game in Arizona just last year. The other thing about these September games is that the Seahawks generally play a team close on the road in September. Of those 10 losses, 7 of them were within 7 points. You know, 2 of them were 3 points or less, but the other 5 were in that 4 to 7 point range within one score, and then the other 3 were 10 or less points.
That speaks to the entire way that the Seahawks have played under Russell Wilson. Like, they rarely get blown out. Rarely, rarely, rarely. But let's say they do get blown out in this game. I don't care. I care, but like, I'm not going to have a freak out about
it.
Like, and they could even look bad doing it. I'm not going to have a freak out about this team until like week 9, if they're not starting to look like they're putting it together.
You mean if they don't win while you're in the stadium in week 3, that's not going to be enough for you to freak out?
Well, it's not even going to be an option because they don't lose when I'm in the stadium. So I don't even, I'm putting that one out of my mind.
That's not even in consideration. I gotcha.
Right. But how many slow starts have we seen this team get off to?
Oh, my gosh. That was my problem with the people that were watching the Bengals game and freaking out about it. Like, you've watched this team before. You are a fan of this team, right? You know that this is what they do.
Yeah. Like, are we shocked here?
I was not shocked.
Can you still be disappointed? Yes, still be disappointed. That's okay. But just don't act like the sky is falling.
It could be a big day for the Steelers. Juju Smith-Schuster working out of the slot. You had Ugo Amadi playing inside the slot. He got hurt in this last game against the Bengals. They re-signed Jamar Taylor to bring him back. He had his struggles in the preseason. It could be a rough day for Jamar Taylor and the Seahawks secondary.
It might.
Kendrick Thompson may not play in this game, so I'm curious to see if we see Lano Hill or Marquise Blair.
Is T2 hurt?
Apparently he's hurt. He's listed as doubtful on the injury report.
Oh. Okay, I didn't know.
Puna Ford's listed as doubtful on the injury report.
Yeah, I kind of heard that calf strain wasn't great.
But the good news is that Ziggy Ansah, he was practicing this week. LJ Collier practicing this week. So, and then you have another week of Clowney getting the playbook under his belt. So while Puna Ford's out, you could see some good things from the edges for the Seahawks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a total, possibility of that. We could see Quentin Jefferson string together a couple of games. You could see, another guy, unsung guy like Brandon Jackson or somebody put together a game up the middle that you didn't see coming. I mean, I really don't worry about the defensive line all that much short of health. And otherwise, I like the personnel. You know, after the Clowney trade, I look at that defensive line and I go, hey, when all these guys are healthy and not suspended, This is a hell of a defensive line.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of guys that were suspended, Clowney took Jaron Reed's number while he was suspended. If you're not going to use it for the first six games, why don't I give you a little money and just to let you get by, and I'll take the number off your hands for the season.
There you go. See?
I do feel bad for any of those people that initially thought the Clowney was going to be 91 and went ahead and ordered a custom jersey, though.
Yeah, just don't do that. Maybe wait to see.
Give him a week inside the Seahawks uniform just to see what he ends up with?
Yeah, to negotiate with the guy wearing his number, which happened to be Jaron Reed. And right now, I'm sure he's losing game checks, right, over the suspension. He probably was fine taking the money.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Hey, and as far as numbers go, I'm still holding out on getting my Shaquem Griffin jersey because 49 just doesn't seem like a real linebacker number to me.
There you go, exactly
that could change any time.
You never know.
Although maybe not during the season, but.
I don't know. I guess I'm not going to worry about it too much until he comes back off of IR.
He wasn't. Griffin wasn't on IR.
Keem wasn't on IR? I thought they did put him on IR. Oh. Well, there you go.
They put Dixon on IR.
Wait, which Dixon?
Oh, Ed. Not Michael.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, I saw him playing.
Yeah, we have the good Dixon suited up and punting.
Okay, all right. Although, man, he was really, you know, kind of quick punting a lot of those balls.
He almost, like, it was because he almost had that first one blocked.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it was a special teams coach got in his head. You know, one of the Bryans or, you know, whatever. But I was a little disappointed in the hang time with all but one of them.
Yeah, he did boom one, though, after I think it was after the two sacks and then the give up play where he really boomed one. But yeah, I don't blame the guy for not wanting to get hit. He does kind of have a quick follow through, though, anyway.
What does he think? He's the Arnold Palmer of punting.
People are digging this punting analysis, though, I bet.
Well, you know what? If they don't, then they're probably not a true fan because he's a big part of our team. So whatever.
The key to the game, stopping the Steelers, making them one-dimensional. Just like against the Patriots, they just had 12 runs for 25 yards. That made Big Ben go to the air. You know, 47 passes, completed just 27 for 276 yards, which is probably, you know, if you look at Andy Dalton's stat line, and they don't give up those two big plays, he's probably at about 276 yards on the day.
Yep, exactly.
Since you're on the road, let's cut this a little bit quick. We'll get to the back half of the show. I'm going to tell a little story, and we'll welcome some new members of the flock.
I love it. All right, let's do this.
Getting into the second half of the show, and Adam, I think the two-year freeloader grace period we introduced last show, it seemed to resonate with people.
Oh, well, good, because this isn't easy after being in three different sawmills over a 1,700-mile span over the last 6 days. It was really hard to fit this show in. I'm not going to lie.
But we did it. We got it in before the game on Sunday. So people are now going to have something to listen to on Saturday as they're getting ready, because it's going to be tough, you know, waiting for that early morning start on Sunday. And I'm glad we could be there for folks.
Exactly, man.
Troy asks, how do we apply for a freeloader grace period extension?
I think he just did. Guess what, Troy? Granted.
Troy's extension's granted.
Yes. And I'll tell you what, whether I deny or grant these extensions are going to be completely arbitrary and on a whim.
So if people email in asking for an extension, just be prepared. It's not automatic.
No, if you make a great case, I might be like, screw you, get in the flock and quit your whining. Or maybe you're just like, I got no excuse and I suck at life. I might be like, granted.
It'll be like a Blair Walsh field goal attempt.
Right, right. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
You don't know. It might be a short gimme and you miss it.
Right.
Well, let's give a welcome of the flock to Jeremiah James Smith, who is in at $25 a month. Says, hey guys, just want to say that you guys rock. Best Seahawks podcast that I've heard. Information on point, fair opinions on the team and the team matchups about players, staff, coaches, you name it. Adam, you're hilarious. I laugh at the things that you say. I love when you say catfish, the Rams and catfish, every division opponent that we face. I just subscribed to you guys on the 25 per month tier. Been hearing from you fellas for quite a while and decided to be part of the flock. Hope that the Hawks go 12-4 or better this year and beat the Rams once or twice in the 2019 season. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. I'm really, really secretly hoping that this Jeremiah James is the same one that I saw sing at the Top Hat, like, probably like 7-8 years ago, who was awesome.
Mm.
And love that guy. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really hoping for that. If it's not, then I'm still going to be happy because he seems like a cool guy with a good taste in humor.
And I like how he says, been hearing from you fellas for quite a while. That feels like code for about 2 years.
True fact.
Speaking of people who have been with us a while listening to the show, Cora in Deutschland became a 1212 patron.
Yeah, I didn't know it. She hasn't been a 1212er for a while.
Yeah, that's people like that that you go, like, because we met up with Cora at the London game.
Yeah.
And it just feels like she's been part of the flock for so long.
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of surprised. So thanks for that.
David Croyle in at $3 says, I forgot to put a message in the Become a Patron page, so I'm messaging it to you. After listening to your last pod, I realized I had been freeloading for almost 3 years. That was way longer than the two-year grace period Adam had allotted.
Yeah.
So here's my $3 a month from a 15-year-old who lives and breathes Seahawks. Thanks for producing such a great pod, guys. And last but not least, go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks, man. That means he started listening when he was the magical age of
12.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's great. And although I do feel a little bad for shaming somebody who's not a legal adult into like giving us money. that I don't know is good. But I appreciate it, man.
I probably did worse things with my money when I was 15.
Oh, I know I did. But secondly, you're the crooked commissioner of the Pick'em League, and so you can always just throw up a prize.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And I got a prize out to Ithrin, who won the Pick'em League Week 1 this past week with 14 correct picks.
That's just cheating. There's no other way around it. I went 12-3, was super proud, thought I was, like, crushing it. But nope, turns out
you were not the best team.
No. Which I still got to put a new team name up. I'm sorry. It's been a crap show this last like week and a half for me. I'll get it together, I promise.
But we both have some work to do to get things together, but it's fine. We have some more members of the flock to welcome, including Joseph Van Tassel in at $5 a month. Welcome to the flock, Joseph.
What was the last name?
Van Tassel.
Van Tassel. Oh, I thought it was Fantastic. And since it's not, his new name now for me forever is going to be Joseph Fantastic.
Joseph, he should change that.
Well, if not, that's just who he is to me now.
Because I think Keith Kettover has officially changed his name to Floctimus Prime on his birth certificate now.
Yeah, yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that way when people call him Floctimus in public, you know, it fits with the legal description on the birth certificate.
Yeah, he can have it on his driver's license now. It's a good way to go.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Welcome to the flock to Paul Murphy. Paul in Seattle, in at $5, says, hey, Brandon and Adam, just signed up to be a little flocker this week. I'd never normally pay money to a couple of strangers, but you guys not only know your Hawks, but also brighten my day with your humorous take on all things NFL. I'm originally from Scotland, now living in Seattle with Seahawks season tickets. I'd love it if you could give a shout out to the UK Seahawkers. So many of my friends are part of that group and love the show. Hope to see you at a flock meetup sometime in the season. Keep up the great work and go Hawks.
Oh, and go Hawks. And yes, we have a lot of mutual friends with those UK Seahawkers folks. Like, a lot of good dudes. So next week, Paul, like, the Saint game, you're going to be there, right? Right? Listener meetup, right? Going to come down, say hi? Yeah? You better.
Yes. I'm already starting to put the plans in place. I'm trying to find a venue for Saturday night that we can meet up at about 6:30 on Saturday. And then there's a comedy show at Comedy Underground at 10 o'clock. I thought it might be fun to scoot over there wherever if we decide to do that. And then those two things are kind of tentative, but set in stone is we're meeting up at the Military Seahawkers tailgate. And that'll be Sunday morning before the game. And then to Pizza Professionals after the game.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll probably do the meetup on Saturday. I probably won't go to a comedy show at 10 p.m. That's probably not going
to
happen.
I tried to do the drinking meetup early enough in the evening because I know you're camping that evening and you might not be able to stick around town late.
Right, right. And I like to drink early. So,
well, 6:30. I mean, that's not super early.
No, that's perfect old man drinking time. That's when you start.
I can move the time up if you want. We could meet up at earlier than 6:30.
Well, then I have to leave Montana earlier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I picked a pretty good time there. See, I didn't run the spot. We could work these logistics out on this show right now.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's thrilled. Who else got in the flock for this biting commentary that we give?
Santiago, in at $3 a month, says, thanks for the great content. I started listening a few weeks before the draft this year. You have satisfied my desire for football content admirably in the offseason. Thanks and go Hawks. Welcome to the flock, Santiago.
Yeah, that was addressed to you, Brandon. Good job.
Stuart Sutta, in at $3 a month. Stuart, welcome to the flock.
Hell yeah, man. But I have a problem with this one. I mean, we have our buddy Jared Tim, and I just don't trust people with two first names.
No?
Just don't.
Okay.
No.
Mark Gretzinger, he's in. $3. Welcome to the flock, Mark. Or welcome back.
He got enough flack for that last name that I trust him. See how this works?
And Will, in at $3 a month. Welcome to the flock. Will says, hey, Brandon and Adam, as I was visiting Seattle and Aberdeen in 2013, I was turned into a football fan and a Seahawker by local friends. Last year, I saw my first game in London. This experience was so amazing, and ever since then, I'm following your show. You're the best. Go Hawks from Germany.
Dude, you're the best for becoming a Seahawks fan from across the pond. That's not easy to do. That takes real effort and commitment.
Welcome to the flock to Scott Harrion, in at $3 a month.
Ooh, I see. I'm partial to Scott's. Don't ask me why. Again, this is all on a whim.
Well, isn't in your dad's name Scott?
Yeah, but that's not why. He's so-so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Paul King, in at $3 a month through PayPal. And Paul says, thanks, Adam, for calling me out in this week's episode and convincing me to get in the flock after 2 years of freeloading. Flying the flag for the Seahawks in the not-so-Pacific Northwest of England. Go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks. See? I knew it would work. Nobody wants to feel like a freeloader.
No. And our last one here, we had a 12-12 one-time donation from Johnny D. in Silverton, Oregon. Says, I've been worried. I was being a freeloader for listening to the podcast for free since I found it earlier this summer. After some revelations from the episode this week, I was relieved to find out I was well under the two-year period, as that might be fine for some, since finding your podcast while searching for a way to get through the NFL vacation time, I am striving every day to do better at life than Skip. With that, I've made a one-time donation and will be looking to join the flock. I will be honest, though, and admit that this is also motivated by a neurotic sports superstition. I know that it will keep me up late at night if I didn't do so before the start of the season. The sports superstition that I am afflicted with has been used for good in this case, as well as on game days where I am positive that the Hawks will only do well if I am doing something productive, mowing the lawn, saving the world, laundry, etc., which I know is completely egocentric, or is it narcissism? It does help to get things done on the weekends, though. I love what you two are doing and really enjoy the mix of Hawks / NFL news and the banter between. I have since worked to spread the podcast to the masses as each episode gets better and better. I will admit the Rams Know Your Enemy episode was amazing and my favorite so far.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of people enjoy it when I get a little sauced for the podcast. They like that better. I don't know.
Drunk Adam just needs to make appearances every now and then, and it helps the show.
About once every 2 months, I think.
It's just a little sprinkle of it.
Yeah. But, way better at life than Skip Bayless. He crushed the freeloader grace period.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Welcome to the flock, Johnny.
Yeah, welcome to the flock, man. It's a cool family.
All right. Well, before I move on to my story, Adam, I did get one other email here from somebody who maybe wasn't so impressed with the freeloader grace period. Says, okay, I was going to donate since I prefer your show over the others, but now I'm embracing being a catfish freeloader. If anything, good. I feel as if the Seahawks should cover the freeloaders out there, with me for being a lifelong Seahawks fan. I was born in 72 and was raised a Seahawks fan by my Pacific Northwest family, all whom hated me and tied me to the easiest team to beat throughout history, except in recent years. So the household I was raised in and all my aunts and uncles have been fans of the Raiders, Broncos, Cowboys, and Chiefs. So year in, year out, I've remained a Seahawks strong. Of course, I'm mentally unstable because I'm always thinking that the Seahawks will go 16-0 year after year. So I like your show, recently turned on by my kids showing me YouTube and stumbled on your show. Keep up the good work, from a freeloader. That's from Jason.
Funny stuff, man. Hey, well, I appreciate that, Jason. And I like this idea that the Seattle Seahawks, the organization, needs to subsidize all the freeloaders that listen to the show. Like, yeah. They should just give it. Now we're getting somewhere. Now I think that the organization itself should begin to pay us directly, but then stay out of our hair and not really make us do anything.
Right. Just let us keep doing what we're doing, but but subsidize our effort in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. On behalf of all those folks, you know, that have suffered their whole life as a Seahawks fan in one form or another, especially when you have family like that, that has like just some god awful fandoms, you know.
I feel like the team might need to subsidize fans that are in that type of situation.
Mm.
Like whether it's just, you know, a little bit of a cut for being a Seahawks fan every month, you know, like a $12 a month check. If you can prove that you're surrounded by family members that are Raiders, right. Broncos, Cowboys, and Patriots fans, like you deserve just a little bit of a cut to help keep your fandom going.
Look, I didn't watch Democratic debates last night. I just didn't get around to it. But somebody should pick up this platform. That seems like it's right up one of their alleys. One of them. Right?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. One way or the other. I mean, it's not like I care much about who their candidate is or anything like that. This isn't a statement on that at all. I just think that some national figure should make this their platform, and I think it would do well for me.
If I can get charged $10 for a beer when I go and watch a game, the Seahawks can manage to scrape off a little bit of that cheddar off the top and give it to fans who are in rough situations like Jason.
There we go. Exactly. Your fandom is only as good as the least among you, you know?
Yeah. All right. So I was at the game this weekend.
Yeah.
This past weekend for the Bengals. And I mentioned the guy who was booing the team. Fine. It was fine. But he reaches over, slaps me in the arm, and he goes, come on, you got to join in on this. And he was pretty sauced by at this point in the second half. It was in the second half.
Well, Seahawks make daddy drink.
he was drinking even before the Seahawks kicked off.
Yeah, see, that's how bad it is for this poor chap. He's already drinking before the game.
So he's egging me on and criticizing me and my fandom for not booing the team.
Right.
I'm like, dude, I'm not booing my team. I'm sorry. And then And he acts all offended. Like, now he's the jerk, which he kind of is. But I said, dude, you can do what you want. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just not doing it.
Did you make noise on third down?
Did I?
Yeah.
I made noise on first and second down, too.
Okay, then you did your job as a 12. He can sod off.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And you know what? Who was right in the end? Me. Because the team pulled out the win.
Yeah, exactly. How dare he doubt the Seahawks right there?
Oh, he was doubting them hard. He thought the game was over. They were going to be terrible. And made me wonder if he'd ever been to a game before.
Yeah, well, maybe it was a first-time experience. Who knows?
I don't think so. I think he knew what he was doing if he's drinking to get ready for a 1 o'clock start.
Yeah. Does he give it the DCH reverse jinx? Is that what he's trying to do?
It didn't feel like a reverse jinx, but maybe it worked as effectively as a DCH reverse jinx.
Yeah, well.
I think DCH was in full effect probably by halftime of this game, saying how much we were going to lose, especially after going down 17-14 right before the half.
Oh, probably. Hey, speaking of which, are we doing the chats on the Facebook still during games, or has that changed to another platform in the Ring of Honor?
It's a little bit of both. It's on the Ring of Honor, but we have a Slack channel now for during the game.
Why is that different?
Because with Facebook, it's their algorithm, and I go to Facebook, and I'll see posts that are from 3 days ago. And when we're doing it, and we're doing a chat during the game, it makes it really wonky. So with Slack, it can be sequential.
Oh, okay. All right. That might be enough to motivate me to figure it out.
Because then you can chat in real time. Facebook's not good for that.
That's helpful. No, not really.
So that is for our members of the flock who are in the Ring of Honor. You'll find the link there. I think I posted a little sticky note to the top, or at least I will. I'll put it back up on game day so people know how to find it. So you know how to find it, Adam.
Thank you, because again, this is all about me.
It's all about you, and Nathan in Bloomfield, New York agrees. He says, if there's one thing I've learned from listening to this podcast for 2 years now, it's that you always listen to Adam. No matter how much he sounds like he's just ranting about nothing, he's built quite the resume of correct opinions. Eddie Lacy, Rashad Penny, Amara Darbo, etc. And now, after this offseason, with all the rumors that Antonio Brown could be traded, and Adam immediately saying that he had no interest in the Seahawks trading for the best wide receiver in the game, Adam once again looks like a genius. Well done.
Hey, thanks, man. Like, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. And I do get my fair share correct. Let's put it that way.
Although you didn't call DK Metcalf the best wide receiver in the game this offseason, so I think you might miss out on that one.
What did I say about his, upcoming season? What would be a successful season in my mind?
Like 600, 700 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still on track.
He could break it even. Or he could come back down to earth after a breakout game like that.
No, it's always a steady trajectory to awesome. There's never any setbacks, ever.
That's right. Jermaine Curse was awesome every year.
Every game, every down.
Hey, speaking of prognosticators, how about Michael Walters from back on August 3rd? Says, am I crazy for thinking that the Hawks should make a move for Clowney? We obviously need some D-line help, and we seem to have 99 linebackers. Maybe ship Mingo and a late-round pick?
Yeah. I saw that, right after the Clowney trade? I happened to see it. I was like, wow, okay. what's the stock market going to do over the next week? Any penny stocks I need to be investing in? I'll take any tips.
Yes, let us know, Michael. You've clearly got this dialed in, because I remember seeing that comment initially, and I'm like, we're going to be able to trade for Clowney with Mingo and a late round pick.
Yeah, well, turns out we can.
And we can get the Texans to pay for it. So how about that?
Well, at least half of it.
Maybe we need to get John Schneider to start working this deal for Minka Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins.
Oh, yeah? Well, maybe. I mean, he'd pair up nicely with McDougald, right?
Or even a slot corner.
Yeah. Does he play in the slot more? I thought he was a safety.
He's kind of both. He's more of a... I think he played more corner in college, though. And he's kind of... He's not happy in Miami because they're playing him at safety.
Well, that's not why he's not happy in Miami.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. Well, what do you say we get into some do better and better at life?
All right, man. I'm going to be short because I want to wrap this up quick because I'd like to
You're
drive
sitting
back
by
up
the freeway in California. You need to get back to, you need to get back on the road and get home.
I'm getting looks from people who stop. They're very confused as why I'm sitting in my car yelling at things.
That's not abnormal in California.
Yeah, I know, but you still don't want to be the crazy person on the train, right? But speaking of things that are normal in California, this is my do better for this week. Everyone here, and again, this is short and sweet. Everybody here drives like a catfish pole. God, they are such jerks. Ride your ass, cutting in and out of lanes, cutting you off. Like going 15 over the speed limit, running you off the road. Like I'm going 5 over. That should be enough. Like I'm in the middle lane. Go around. Okay. Right. You know, it just move, you know, just head up their butts the entire time. I can't stand it here. Do better.
Yeah. I can see that you've been in the California traffic too many days now. You need a break from the city time.
Oh man.
My do better this week is for NFL refs. And watching football this weekend, it got me annoyed, Adam, about the officiating. And there's one call in particular that makes me wonder if there's some kind of meeting by all these refs to make a call in the way they do. And that's if you've ever watched the pass interference calls, when officials are calling pass interference, whenever it's on the defense, it's like pass interference, defense, number 25. And it's that same kind of monotone. They're not really demonstrative about it. Now, when it's offensive pass interference, it's a totally different situation. It always sounds like this: pass interference, offense number 18. They let it hang for just a second before they call it on the offense because they know you're expecting defense, and they emphasize it in a degree that makes me think they're playing this up intentionally. And for that, NFL refs do better.
Okay, so they don't get a lot of moments to shine, let's say, but you are 100% right. They revel in calling offensive pass interference. Just like you said, pass interference, offense. Ah, see what I did there? Totally tripped you up. You thought I was called defense. Bitch.
Catfish.
It's on the offense. Eat it. Yeah. Like, that's what they basically do that every
time.
They do
it. That's what it feels like in my heart when they make the pause and they emphasize it that way.
No, that's funny. That's a true fact. I mean, I noticed it, but I hadn't noticed it, if that makes sense.
You knew what I was talking about when I said it, though, where I was going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You instantly, as you start describing, it's like, oh, yeah, they totally do that.
They
yes.
do it. Just watch.
Yeah.
Everybody, you're
yeah.
not going to be able to watch the game the same now anytime, because it's like when you used to watch the old movies on the reel-to-reels and you could see like the little flash up on the top left before yeah. they had to change the roll of film at a movie theater.
Right.
You can't unsee that once you notice it. Now, it doesn't matter now because mm-hmm. everything's digital. But now people aren't going to be able to unhear the inflection point of the pass interference on offense.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot like watching a game with Chris Collinsworth calling it. Once you start like hearing the Chris Collinsworth chortles, like every time like a big play happens, oh, you know, he just does that every time. You can't unhear him anymore.
I've never picked up on that, and now I'm a little bit concerned.
The Collinsworth chortles? Oh my god. Yeah. Every big play. It's like he's impressed and surprised all at the same time. Like, you know, back breaks a tackle. Oh. Somebody does. You're welcome, America.
You're welcome.
All right, my better life than Skip Bayless this week is for a business owner of a business near where I was working and a story that was told to me about him. And I just thought it was cool. Good boss, treats all of his employees really, really well. Everybody that works there has been there for like 20 years, right? Or more. 15, 20 years. And so I ended up, you know, we had some time to kill. I ended up chatting with these guys at the business next door. And, you know, they start telling me a little bit about their boss. I was like, oh, that's cool and everything. Oh, great guy to work for. Great guy. And it's like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. Like 15 years ago, he called everybody into his office who had come to the country, quote, illegally and was working for him. Mm. Ordinarily, when somebody does that, that turns into a pretty sad ending.
Yeah.
You know what he does? He actually brings them all in the office and he says, we're going down to my lawyer's office. And we're going to get you started on all the paperwork to get you into this country legally and your families. And it's on me.
Oh, sweet.
And I thought that was super cool because instead of waiting for our politicians to finally do something about immigration, because none of them are going to do anything about anything.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Yeah. Like he decided to do something about it personally to the biggest amount of his abilities. And I thought that was really cool. Showed a big heart. So that guy who will remain nameless in his business will remain nameless because I don't have his permission to tell that story. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, I can't imagine it's an easy process to go through.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
Paperwork, government. I don't know.
Hey, I'm still working like on trying to fill out my taxes after this extension that I had. And I think they're supposed to be due here this weekend. So I know paperwork can be tough.
Yes, it can.
All right. My better at life this week is for John Schneider of the Seattle Seahawks. And I have to define that because John Schneider of the, you know, it's also the guy from Dukes of Hazzard. I don't know if you know that.
No, I did not know that.
Duke.
I should know that.
Yeah, Bo Duke, John Schneider. And apparently they met up in this offseason. It has nothing to do with my better at life. That just popped into my head. But random trivia now.
Just fun fact.
Yeah, fun fact. Yeah. But for the first game, against the Bengals, I found out from Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He did an article about how the Seahawks have now become the latest team to offer a sensory room. So for fans who are autistic or have PTSD, who go to a game and you get kind of overwhelmed by the noises, they now have a room that you can go to that has you know, things like fidget spinners, headphones to help drown out the noise. And so I just know that being in the military, that I've run into military members who say, you know, I would love to go to a game, but I can't do it just because they're, you know, with the fireworks and the loud noises, I can't handle that for 3 hours straight.
No.
So this now gives people that are in that type of situation a place where they can go and get away from it and have a quiet room until they're good again. and can come back out and enjoy the game. So, and I guess they have TVs down there so you can keep watching the game. And it's just, it's a cool idea. I guess other teams have thought about this as well. And obviously with John Schneider having his oldest son, Ben, who was diagnosed with autism, it makes a ton of sense. And so for John Schneider and the Seahawks and their new sensory room, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I like it, man. Those kind of tie together, you know, people taking what influence that they have and just trying to make the world better, however it is that they can, and not worrying about everybody else. Love it.
See, we closed the show. It's almost like we planned this.
Yeah, but we didn't. None of the catfish ever planned. No. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.